Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Off the Pulpit. My name is Eugene.
I'm Jason.
I'm Thomas.
Three pastors and with three friends conversing on life, culture, and church off the pulpit. Thanks for listening. I'm gonna be honest, you probably don't know from the title, this one's a very impromptu episode. We don't have any rundown or like outline in front of us, but if you are listening, you probably already heard the news that Pastor Tim Keller, Dr. Keller, passed away this past Friday, May 19th, of pancreatic cancer that he's been battling with over the last year. And yeah, I mean, you'll hear it from this episode, but Tim Keller has been a huge impact on three of us. I don't think we would start this podcast. I don't think we would even be in ministry without him. So we just wanted to do like a short, or I don't know how long this will go, but just a tribute to him and his legacy and how much he's impacted us. I know it kind of messed up all of us during, you know, this past Friday. But yeah, I guess to start, where were you guys when you heard the news? And I guess what was like your first emotional processing of those moments for you guys?
Well, I told our church on Sunday that outside of Kobe Bryant, I can't think of another public figure who I didn't have like a personal connection with, whose death impacted me this much. I couldn't even, it was hard for me to even post anything because I just had so many emotions. And then just like with Kobe, it was on one hand, really, it wasn't surprising that I felt those emotions, but on the other hand, it was surprising because again, like I didn't have a personal relationship with Tim Keller, but I think that was in some sense the impact that he had on my life and maybe on so many people's lives, where I talked to a lot of people who just said he just felt like he was our spiritual grandfather,
yeah,
or our spiritual uncle, you know, like there was, it just felt like, when you think about the ways that his ministry and his life nurtured so many of us into the faith, I think that's kind of the role he had. So, yeah, you told me, Eugene, like I found out from you, actually. I mean, I saw the post the day before that he was, he had gone home to receive hospice care. But I had no idea it was going to happen so quickly after that. And so,
yeah,
it was kind of like numb the rest of the day.
Yeah, you guys know I was at a conference in Washington, D.C., and it was like middle of a talk. And all of a sudden I saw like a text saying that Keller passed away. And I didn't pay attention to the conference the rest of that day. It was like, man, what in the world? Like I was just looking at all these, you know, what happened. And similar sentiments to Jason. It felt strange because, again, I didn't personally know him. I got to meet him once, so that was really cool. It felt like it was weird. Like you lose a person that you don't know, but I think he represents so much of like your formative history.
Yep.
And so because of that, you just felt like a deep sense of loss. It felt like a lot of like reflection that I kind of experienced when I heard he passed. And so, yeah, I haven't fully processed it because, again, I just came back from that conference, and I feel like throughout this conversation, it'll probably resonate more.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's, I echo Tom. I'm hoping this will help us process a little bit. I was at home, and actually, I think my wife was the one that told me because she knew a friend that, you know, one thing I respected was I think Redeemer emailed their members first without going public about the death. So even that, I was just like, man, it's just, you know, a very fitting way for Keller to pass, like very humble and to his church first. And then when I heard it, it was just, yeah, it was weird because like Kobe really messed me up because it came out of nowhere. And this one was a little weirder because you knew he was going to pass once that one statement came out. He was in hospice care. But when he passed, it was just like, I remember, you know, they just posted that last message he gave to Redeemer. That was like a couple weeks ago, which is pretty wild. But even watching that, it's just like, man, I'm not, that's it. I think I'm pretty sure I've listened to every archival, or at least free archival sermon. So it's just like, that's it. That's like all the wisdom I'm going to get. So just, yeah, still processing. I guess a good way to start off the majority of this, like, you could probably tell he means a lot to all three of us. But I guess for you guys in your own words, like, why does he mean so much to us and to you personally? And, like, I think most Korean-American pastors will feel, well, majority of them will probably feel this way. But, yeah, like, for you guys, like, personally, what did he mean to you and why did he impact you so much?
I mean, we get into, like, the things he taught, maybe specifically, but there's actually, like, a story where I remember when I first became a Christian, I went to a conference, and I remember the conference, it was like, you know, that like master's fundamentalist type of conference that was there. And the way they were talking about like how to be a Christian and what it looks like, I remember I was like so turned off by it. I was like, oh, this is Christianity. Like, so if I'm Christian, I have to like hold on, I have to be like Republican. I need to like be like certain about truth. I need to like make sure I defend the Bible really hard. And even though like part of me felt weird about that, I'm like, well, I guess that's what it means to be a Christian. And so that was almost like the only model that I felt like I had of like what Christianity looked like. And so I remember when I engaged Keller for the first time, like at first I was like, who is this guy who's like compromising like what the Bible truth is and so forth. But I remember when that's when I heard about him. And then the first time I like encountered like his work was he gave a talk at Veritas Forum. It was at UC Berkeley, and he gave like a short gospel presentation, and he did like a Q&A. And, you know, UC Berkeley, it's like, at least especially at that time, as liberal as it gets, like, and all these collegians were asking him like these like snarky questions, these hard questions. And I was so shocked with like how intellectually engaging he was able to be with them, but also like super kind and humble. And I never saw that in a Christian, like at least a public figure. I always saw like the pastors, like they're like, well, this is truth. And they just kind of shut a person down. And they have this kind of very narrow worldview. But he was like the first one that actually engaged the non-Christian in their own terms without compromising what the gospel was. And that just blew my mind. Because again, I didn't even know you could be a Christian like that. And so that's when I, you know, read Reason for God. And it just brought me this whole trail of like all his sermons and writings. And so I remember Keller, he means a lot to me because he introduced a different category of Christianity that I feel is a truer category that kind of strayed away from that typical white evangelical Southern type of Christian, but he introduced something new. So so that was very formative for me.
If it wasn't for Keller, do you think you'd be in ministry right now, Tom?
Probably, but I would be a different type of minister.
You wouldn't be on this podcast type of minister.
Oh man, right? I don't know if maybe me and Jason wouldn't have been friends. It was a very narrow tribe that I think I the trajectory of where
got
I was
it,
heading.
Got yeah. it. So Keller opened that up. Okay. Jason, and for you, like, personally, what do you mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much you could say. For me, I remember the first, I had heard about Tim Keller while I was on the East Coast. I didn't really listen to much of his stuff. But in 2006, I also went to a Veritas that he did at Harvard. And that one was really interesting because he was on stage with like a leading historian as well as like a leading law professor at Harvard. And, you know, I went because I heard like there was a pastor that was on this panel with these like with two of the greatest thinkers of that time, you know, and it was really interesting because, you know, from the beginning, the other two guys, they were like flexing all their knowledge and dropping random references from books that nobody knew. And a lot of times it felt like they were kind of intentionally leaving Keller out of the discussion. You know, they were almost talking to each other. And what was so amazing was Keller would chime in and he would quote from the same books that they were quoting from, and he could go toe to toe with them. And kind of like what Tom said, I'd never seen like a Christian I just never seen a Christian be able to defend the faith and kind of communicate on that intellectual level. So I would say his mind and his ability to kind of engage the mind is what really piqued my interest. But I think, you know, even then, Keller to me was just, you know, someone I admired and respected. But it wasn't until I heard a sermon by him, and I still remember the first sermon I ever heard, and it was called "The Girl Nobody Wanted," and it was about Leah and Rachel. And I remember being in Philadelphia, and I just turned that sermon on, and I, you know, my whole life I had thought that story about Jacob, you know, wanting Rachel, the beautiful younger sister, you know, working 7 years to get her and then realizing wedding night, it's not her, it's Leah, and then working another 7 years. I always thought that story was about Jacob. I always thought it was about, you know, man, his relentless pursuit of the love of his life. And it was the first time I had heard the story from Leah's perspective. And obviously, as a Korean American living in the 21st century, I there's very little I have in common with Leah, but I remember like sitting at my desk weeping, listening to that sermon, because as an Asian American, as a son of immigrants, an oldest son of immigrants, that felt like, you know, there were these standards placed for me that I had to achieve. And yet in many ways, I was still very invisible in society. Like at the time I was trying to pursue music I was the lone Asian American trying to pursue music on the East Coast and just feeling very invisible. And I remember listening to that sermon and I just experienced the love of God in such a palpable way. And Keller had this incredible ability to like engage you with your mind and then just wreck your heart.
Yeah.
And I had never met a pastor who could do that in one sermon, you know? It was either just purely intellectual and just giving me like apologetics or like full on emotional and just trying to make me cry. But like every sermon. So then after that, I just couldn't stop. And I would say that those sermons started shaping me. And they were so important for me in that formative season of my life.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very similar to Tom and Jason. I think to consolidate my answer, I think with Keller, and I want to talk about in a little bit, like why Asian Americans are so drawn to him. But Keller was the first one, especially if you grew up in church, the first person to make you want to believe in Jesus. I think like for the longest time for me, kind of like Tom, it was everything around me was, oh, if you want to believe God and follow God, it's brute force and obedience. And, you know, there's room for that. But Keller was the first, I would say, yeah, the first one that made me want to believe that Jesus was real and made me want to have more of Jesus and made him more beautiful. You know, Jason mentioned how he kind of intellectually was very deep in just that water. And kind of let you know that, you know, you don't have to just be this faith is blind and everything will turn out fine. So I'm just going to believe in Jesus and let him take the wheel. But yeah, for me, Keller, he was the one that made Jesus like beautiful to me and like want to believe him. So, I mean, we'll talk about our sermons and everything. But I just remember that the one sermon I do remember, and I think Tom was at it live, was his 2011 TGC sermon on just Moses parting the Red Sea in Exodus. I think it was called Getting Out. But I remember listening to that and it was like, oh, it hit me because I was like, oh, that's the first time grace, the idea of grace really finally clicked in my mind that it's, you know, it's very famous. And we'll talk about our famous or our favorite like teachings from him, but you know, it's not the quality of your faith, but the strength of, it's the object of your faith that saves you. And it's like something, it's very simple. It's not like you need a, you know, a PhD to understand that, but it's also very mind blowing, especially if you grew up in the church, just that statement. So to me, he's just the one that kind of unlocked the gospel and connected all the dots that I've always had, especially if you're raised in church. So that just like will always have an impact on me, because I don't think I'd be even here without that. So one question I do have, though, and you guys chime in anywhere, you can take this conversation anywhere, is like, why is it, though, especially within Korean Americans and just maybe Asian Americans a little more broadly, like, why are we so heavily impacted by Keller's ministry? Because I would say most of our friends in our circles, if Keller wasn't there, like, it'd be a huge hit to their church and ministry.
Well, I mean, to provide context, Keller did, he was like the start of those congregations where like half the church is white and half the church is Korean. Right? We see a bunch of those now.
Yeah.
And it was probably because of him. So he was doing something to draw the Koreans. Is it just Koreans or is it Asians in general?
I would say mainly Korean and Chinese Americans, but mainly East Asian Americans.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like those folks, you know, they would go to like the Saddlebacks and the mega churches, but it was a certain type of Asian who goes to those. Sure. If you know what I mean. Like, yeah. the ones who went to like Redeemer, it was like, oh, like that's interesting. And I feel like there are a couple of things Keller was doing that made us drawn to him. One was obviously like his explanation of the gospel. It was this version of grace that didn't feel like cheap grace.
Mm.
It felt like very, because it was like centered on the cross. And so it was opposite of like what we heard in the Asian church, which is all about like obedience, or like in the conservative church, Bible churches, which is about like lordship, which again, all true. But Keller, and he didn't talk about like cheap grace where just come as you are. It was like this type of grace that was very costly, because again, everything he preached about was centered on the cross. And I think for us who are guilt shame Asians, that just resonated with us so deeply. So I think even Jason's response to that one sermon, I think that all of us had that, some type of response to a Keller sermon, because he was preaching grace in a very powerful way. But I also think Keller, he actually, because he was so engaged with the culture, he saw his own whiteness. And I think Redeemer, they weren't just a multi-ethnic church because other people were there of nationalities, but you could feel it, like the music, the language, the style of preaching. Like you couldn't tell he was preaching to like mainly like white people. It's like anybody, it seemed like, who, you know, educated, but anybody could come and be engaged, and so that you could kind of feel that with the service. And I think Keller, he was able to, how do I put it? I feel like he had this posture of humility and not brashness that I felt like it was very like winsome to me. I feel like when people, you know, we talked this before, if you put yourself out there as like this person, it's almost like a turnoff in our culture. But Keller, he was so humble, and yet you knew like, dude, this guy could bring it. And so it just made you gravitate towards him. So there's a lot of different factors that I feel like just made the Asian ear want to hear this guy. Because of all the things he was saying was just hitting the right chords. And so yeah, and it's you know, that's why I think the three of us just were drawn to him as well.
Yeah, to add to that, completely agree with everything Tom just said. And I think so many Asian Americans were drawn to Keller. Some probably for the wrong reasons, you know, on, like, we've talked a lot on this podcast about kind of our, the impulse that's maybe baked into us because of model minority or whatnot in terms of our proximity to whiteness and, you know, wanting to kind of associate ourselves, you know, with the white man, and Keller kind of represented like the cream of that crop in the sense of like a very educated white man ministering to extremely educated people in New York City, you know? And so it was like automatically that there was something about him that we were like, oh, we want to get close to that guy, you know? I think a lot of it was also a reaction. Like Keller represented everything our immigrant churches were not, right? Like that, like, you know, we were used to kind of overbearing, extremely authoritative pastors. And then Keller, on the other hand, like none of his sermons felt that way. You know, again, they all felt like kind of like fireside chats. We were used to really emotional, you know, a lot of crying and, you know, yeah, we have had so many episodes about that, right? And all of a sudden you had someone sharing the gospel in a very winsome way that didn't feel overly emotional. You know, and then like we look at our parents and they just felt, the immigrant church often felt so disengaged or separate, distinct from the culture, right? Like they were creating this little enclave for themselves and everything about the culture was bad. And then you had this pastor, you know, I think Tim Keller was the one who said he always, with every sermon, he holds his Bible, carries his Bible and the New York Times, right? And he's constantly asking the question, how does the word of God speak into our culture today? And I think just somebody willing to be in the culture and understand what modern people were wrestling with was so refreshing for us, you know? And so whatever the reason was, we were drawn to that. But I think the thing that kind of got all of us, as Tom said, was a message of grace at, as you know, at the end of the day, you know?
Yeah, because I feel like from 2010 on, like the trinity of these mega, or like within our reform circles of these like guys that were celebrities were John MacArthur, John Piper, and Tim Keller. And, you know, John MacArthur sounds a lot like maybe a Korean youth pastor you've had. Like it's, and you know, he's still an excellent preacher and expositor. John Piper, his emotional inflections and how he like really got in your face was like, oh, I've heard this before and I'm a little traumatized. But Keller was like, wait, like you're not angry at me. And also you're not asking me to do anything, right? And you're like, whoa, like this is a trick. And I realized like when I heard him, it was just like you couldn't really put him in any category because he was not a pastor, I would dare say, that you've ever had if you grew up in the Korean church. Like he was one of a kind, a unicorn, and finally, as Tom and Jason both mentioned, like infused grace to you in a very unsuspecting way. Like it's not, he's, I've never heard him. If we keep like his verbal mon, like his, you know, up and downs, it's always been steady. It's never, ever, he's never yelled at you. He's never done anything like that. So I think because of that, it's just, it's hit differently. One other question I want to ask you guys is what will you, so I guess to give it a preview, I want to talk about what he's left us with, maybe your favorite sermon analogy, his impact, but what will you, what do you think we're going to miss the most with him gone? Because I do think there's a huge void, not just his sermons, but like we can talk about TGC as an organization now, because they were already in hot water. I don't know what they're going to be without Keller, but just like the landscape too for the evangelical church, it's a huge hole. And I guess for you guys, like, yeah, what will you, what do you think we will miss most about Keller? And what's, I mean, I don't want to make it seem like everything hinges on him, but what's the way forward now with him gone too?
Yeah, like I always, as I'm talking about Keller, I always have to like watch my tone because sometimes like my wife tells me, you talk about Keller with more affection than you talk about Jesus sometimes.
It's close.
And so...
He is the Pope of our tribe, like, right? to put it best.
Yeah. So, I mean, just want to put it out there, you know, Tim Keller is still the man, you know? And, yes. But you know, one thing for me is, especially in the day and age that we live in, with so much division and infighting and hostility, especially in the church, Keller was such a gift because granted, you know, obviously there are certain tribes that loved him more than others, but no one could really claim him as their own, you know, like the liberals, the conservatives, you know, and the thing that for me, I think speaks volumes is we've had so many guests on this podcast now, right? And people have ranged the entire political spectrum, you know, and theological spectrum. And we always joke around that the one person, though, that nobody has anything bad to say about is still Keller, you know? Even the people who I know, like, absolutely disagree with him on a lot of his theological views, they've said to us, you know, off air, like, still Keller's the one guy who will reach out to me or email me or follow up with me and continue to dignify me as a human being, you know? And I just feel like you don't hear that as much these days. You know, you have pastors like drawing lines in the sand, you know, saying, you know, we're not going to fellowship with you because of this. And I don't know. I just feel like, especially in this landscape, I'm going to miss what Keller brought to especially Western Christianity.
Yeah, I mean, to caveat, same as Jason, I have no shame saying to Keller's my boy. He's the GOAT. Like, everyone has a guy. And, you know, for me, like, I love C.S. Lewis. He just formed me in ways that no other author really formed me. You know, love John Piper, love John Mark Comer, love John Tyson. You know, there's all these different guys, but we all know, like, Keller was the guy. Like, he was the guy. And kind of like similar to Jason was saying, because he was so, like, you couldn't peg him in a certain way. And I felt like there was something right about that, that the conservatives and the liberals liked them, and the extreme conservatives and the extreme liberals did not like him. I'm like, that, yeah, then that's like my type of guy. You know what I mean? Because he was in that situation, I felt like he brought like a lot of sanity to the conversations. Like, I felt like, you know, when you were at this point of like tension of what's going to happen with like the culture, how do you make sense with all the disagreements, Keller would drop an essay, or he'd drop a tweet, or he'd have a talk, and it just like makes sense of things. And he doesn't give you the typical answer. It's almost like what he is known to do. Like, there's this third way to like look at this in light of the gospel. And it was always brilliant. So I'll miss the sanity he would bring into the conversation. So I feel like the world, especially amongst like Christians, is going to feel a lot more insane without him.
I mean, like, the fact that even after he passed, like, he was still getting attacked on both sides, and still to this little day on Twitter, like, you have extreme progressive and extreme Christian nationalists like dragging him, even, you know, like saying it's a complicated legacy. And I was like, that's crazy. But that all, you know, that kind of ticked me off. But I also realized, like, oh, he went out the way he came in. Like, that's just Keller. And you know you're doing something right when you're pissing off, like, the fringe elements of both sides. So, to echo both of them, I do think we'll miss that. Like, a lot of the leaders that we follow have a sort of, like, you kind of know where they lean. But with Keller, he just, even with the people, like, you know, you hear all these stories now that are coming out and from very surprising people, like how he dealt with people, quote unquote. Like, it's just like, okay, I don't know if I shared this with you guys, but there's a friend that I met in Japan over missions who works for City to City, and he's with, you know, Keller's the head of City to City. So they're in Korea, and he preaches on how if you just look at Jesus more closely, he will like save you. And he goes to Keller and says, like, I mean, that's true, but isn't the Holy Spirit the main part of it? And Keller's like, yeah, you're right. And the next talk, he says that same line, but he adds in, if you look at Jesus closely, And then he looks at his, my friend, it's by the power of the Spirit that Jesus will save you. And I was just like, dude, there's, look, we've all had people above us and these, like, you know, even in our little worlds, like guys that are quote unquote, maybe mini celebrities. I don't know anyone that would do that. Like, take some random intern's advice and literally use it on the next plenary session. I don't know any celebrity pastor that would do that. So I do think we'll miss that humility that he carried. That I think that's the thing that set him apart, even over his brilliance. That, like, there's a lot of brilliant people out here. Piper, and I'm nothing against Piper, MacArthur, they're all brilliant. But there's a level of humility and grace that Keller brought that, like, man, we, especially in this time, we're really going to miss in this setting.
And that's the one nice thing is all the people who are criticizing Keller, they're all like 5 degrees removed. You know what I mean? Like, there are people who know him from Twitter or they heard about TGC. But people who, like, went to Redeemer or people who knew Keller personally, they're all sharing, like, these stories that nobody heard about. Yeah, so that just shows, like, oh, yeah, you could disagree with his beliefs or his theology and call it complicated, but who are the voices saying that? It's all the people who don't personally know him versus all the people who do know him. You're hearing, like, the radically unique story that we didn't hear of that makes him even, like, wow, he was the real deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is, like, in this age of celebrity pastors, he's, like, the most celebrity pastor who was the least celebrity. You know, it was like he was a walking paradox in that sense. You know, it never felt like he wanted attention, you know, and it just was kind of given to him. And yeah, it's interesting, right? Like, I think with a lot of celebrity pastors, what a lot of celebrity pastors have is at the, you know, if there's, we always talk about the crowd, the congregation, and the core, right? And celebrity pastors usually operate best on the crowd level, like they're beloved by the crowd. And then, you know, usually as you get closer and closer to the center, you get to see, like, the dark underbelly, you know, of everything that's going on. You get to see the shadow side of that person. Whereas with Keller, it felt like the complete opposite, you know, like, I mean, the crowd, there were people who loved him, people who hated him, you know, but it almost felt like the closer and closer you got to the center, the more respect and love there was for him as a man. And I just think that speaks volumes to the man that he was.
We will miss his genius. Like, this guy, I don't know if you're listening right now, like, go on Twitter and just search Keller Sermon Notes and, like, look at what, I think Tom and Jason will know. The manuscript he brings into the pulpit is like an alien language. He created his own language where he, like, skips vowels and like, just to make the word shorter. And that's just how smart he was. Like, the single line, no space. Look it up. It just looks crazy. And he's just that level of genius in ministry.
And here's the thing, right? Like, the there are geniuses and there are brilliant people. But I almost feel like there's a level above that, which is to be able to synthesize the genius in your brain and make it sound, like, profoundly simple for the common, like, average listener. And I feel like so many times, like, I think when people heard, like, Keller was super intellectual, a lot of my intellectual friends, they would go listen to one of his sermons and they would be like, ah, that didn't feel that intellectual. And I was like, ah, it's because you're not appreciating the genius of it. You know, like, he could, if Keller wanted, and I've heard him do it, like, he can cite obscure books with the best of them, you know, and just give you straight up knowledge. But to take all of that information, because the guy reads more than anyone I've ever heard of, to take all of that information and synthesize it into a 30-minute talk. I mean, the fact that Keller can do that in 30 minutes and you got preachers who think they need like an hour and a half to communicate something, he could make something just so simple and yet so profound at the same time. And that was like part of his brilliance.
You know, 20 years from now, he's going to be like a Martin Lloyd-Jones figure where people just heard about him. So we could quote him all we want, like 20 years from now. Right now, kind of, you know, it's too fresh, or he was like a contemporary. But 20 years from now, like, who is this Tim Keller? And we could just quote him freely.
Like, if you're listening and, you know, you don't, like, you're not preaching regularly, like, you don't understand the power of Keller's preaching. Like, all three of us always say, and I think we said this together, like, we cannot listen to Keller until the last stage of our sermon prep. Because if we do... Like, you're going to hear Keller because it's just that good. Like, you don't understand.
Yeah, like you change your whole sermon.
Yeah, and, like, especially if you've preached, you know this. Like, when you listen to him, you're just like, he did it in 35 minutes or less. Like, I've never heard him talk over 40 minutes. I'm just like, it's so crazy. So, like, that's just the – it's just the genius of Keller. And we were blessed to be able to, like, you know, have him and even see him physically too.
And here's the thing, right? Like – I think we, you know, like how, you know, people always, you know, say like, there are always debates, right, about Tupac, like, should he really be, you know, number one?
Sure.
And there is a mystique about someone because they die early.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't get to see their whole body of work, you know, and you just kind of crown them the greatest. And a lot of times there are the Jay-Z's of the world. Who, like, I think at some point the culture starts to sleep on them because they've just been doing something at a high level for so long that you just start to think, it's not that impressive anymore, you know? And I feel like with Keller too, I think if you've listened to all his sermons, everything in his archive, which I'm sure the three of us have listened to most of the sermons in his archive, at some point you know what he's going to do, you know, power of God, the present, you know, what is it? Why do we need it? How do we get it? Right. And the how do we get it is always the gospel. Right. And so, like, it's, I think if you've listened to him for all these years, there's a part of you that can start to think like, okay, it's not that special anymore. But I just think we need to, like, take a moment and realize it's not special because he did it every week. You know, like, he gave you 40 points, 20 rebounds, 10 assists every single time, you know, he came up. And it just became normal for us, you know. But it was brilliant.
To go off, like, the hip-hop analogy, and Jason might understand this, if you're a hip-hop fan, this is like if Kendrick drops two albums per year. Like, you don't understand, like, the level of Keller's work has always been the same. Any sermon you listen to, like, it's all free. Man, I remember I bought a sermon the day they made it free, and I was so pissed off, because basically all of Keller's sermons are free now. But anyways, if you haven't, just, like, look up a random passage, and I promise you that sermon, even though you know what's coming, will hit you, right? So I guess a good segue with that. He's taught a lot. He's preached a lot. He's read or wrote a lot of books. I guess for you guys, like, what's one either sermon analogy or point or maybe even book, like, passage that's always going to stay with you? It could be the ones that people always talk about. Like, there's, like, his most famous examples of, like, you know, I mentioned once, not the strength of your faith, but the object of your faith. But is there anything in particular within his ministry that will always stick with you specifically? Maybe it's a sermon point, analogy, or a writing.
I remember that Veritas talk at Berkeley. Again, I'm not sure many people know about that one, but that's one of the best engagements with, like, non-believers I've seen. And so that one was, like, my introduction to him. Surprisingly, of all the sermons that impacted me, it was like this talk. It wasn't like one of the plenary sessions that I think it was a TGC conference, and it was, like, optional for anyone who wanted to go. And it was all about engaging your city. And I remember when I heard him talking about engaging your city, and it was all, like, Jeremiah 29. That's what inspired me to actually, like, want to, like, church plant. Like, that was the first time it inspired me to, like, oh, pastoral ministry and church, it's not just for believers, but it's engaging those who don't know. So I remember that, like, was hugely formative for me. And again, you know, Reason for God, it was like an apologetic book, and yet I never heard the gospel explained like that. So even though I was a Christian, I was like, oh man, maybe he's talking to me, like in Reason for God. Like that was just hugely impactful for me. And all his books were great, but I remember those, that book like was the introduction that was just a new paradigm shifting way of viewing what Jesus did on the cross. So
man, this one's so hard. It's interesting. Like I almost feel like I could, you know how like sometimes you can listen to a worship song and it immediately kind of transports you to a certain season of your life.
Yeah.
I can almost do that with all of Keller's books, you know, Prodigal God, you know, just the, again, as the older son, you know, and, as an Asian American, I needed that book when I was, I was really kind of struggling, you know, feeling like I had devoted my entire life to God. And I was feeling all this angst about, you know, certain things not working out for me. And that book, like, was such an important book for me in that season. You know, I think about Every Good Endeavor, you know, when I was trying, you know, when before ministry, and I was trying to like figure out like, does my work matter? So important, you know. When I started thinking about issues of justice, you know, I remember when Trayvon Martin, and I started really like thinking through like, what does the gospel have to do with justice and reading Generous Justice? And then, you know, starting as the lead pastor at Citizens, I read Center Church like multiple times. And, you know, obviously like, you know, there, I'm not sure what those books, I haven't read all those books in a long time, but I can say that in those seasons of my life, they meant everything. You know, they kind of framed that entire part of my journey. So
yeah, I mean, I everything they've mentioned I obviously endorse. I think the two things that stick out to me, one, there's this small book he wrote called The Freedom of Self-Forgetfulness. I'm pretty sure it's like a sermon series, but that I think is one of his greatest works, more for like, I guess, my generation of like being a millennial. But yeah, that book was, it's like you can read it in an hour, but it's, it will stick with you. And it really kind of lifts the burden off of you of just wanting all those achievements. So that's one thing. The other is this, okay, it's a random document. It's not even a, so if you know Keller, he writes these like random documents, and he wrote one called Church Size Dynamics, and it sounds hella boring, and it is hella boring, but it's gold if you're in ministry. And the reason I love it is because I realize, dude, this dude is a unicorn. Because, like, I'll tell you this if you don't know. Like, pastors are either good at two things if they are in ministry. You're good at preaching or you're good at leading administratively your church. You're not usually, like, it's, you usually lean one way or the other. But when I read, you know, and with Kelly, you would think, oh, he's just a preaching genius, which he is. But all of his other small random documents that most people would find boring, you read it and you realize, like, this dude knew how to run a church without abusive tendencies. And yeah, I don't know, like just being in ministry, it was just like, oh, there is a way to do church without killing yourself or killing your people. And there was a freedom to that too. Like we're reading Church Size Dynamics right now as a leadership for our church. And it's just crazy of just like, dude, this dude, it's everything is spot on. Everything is spot on, all the tension points we're feeling. So I would, you know, if you're either in ministry, read that. If you're not, I would read Freedom of Self-Forgetfulness. And I think it'll be really helpful with that. But yeah, with that, I don't want to go too long because I know this is like probably this is getting a little like idolatrous maybe. But I hope you guys kind of can tell the impact of Keller, not just as ministers, but just like, man, he made Jesus more clear and beautiful. So with that, yeah, like any last things that you guys wanted to like process together or end with for the episode?
If Keller were here with us, he would be like, but the story is not about Tim Keller.
Yeah.
but yeah, about the one who is greater than Tim Keller, you know. And he did that so well, you know. And it almost became like a meme because, you know, he just the way that he... There are passages that I would have thought... There's no way you could find... Like, it'd be really hard to find Jesus and the gospel here. And yet he does it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, how did you do that? And why am I weeping right now?
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean... Yeah, I mean, if I could just say anything, it would be that I'm so grateful for Tim Keller's ministry, his life, his example. You know, I think as pastors, we've been bombarded with stories of pastors, especially those pastoring large churches with a lot of influence, not ending well. You know, and we've seen a lot of that the last few years, the church riddled with scandal and so just to even see a pastor who ministered so faithfully and ran the race to the very end well is just such an encouragement for me personally as a pastor. And I hope, you know, I'll be able to do the same myself.
Yeah, again, for me, all his teachings, super impactful. And the work that he did, but I am most thankful that he ended well. I joked with you guys, but I said, dude, if Keller doesn't end well and something happens, like, I'm gonna convert to Catholicism. Like, it's you Protestants are messed up. But he ended well, and to me, I'm just like, thank the Lord that he ended well. You know, it's all good. People are haters because of the things he taught, but then his life, that's like the most important to me. And so very, very grateful that somebody ended well.
Yeah, I guess to end, we all three of us always joked that this pod was created in hopes of getting Keller as a guest, and then we would end the pod. Like, that was kind of like our final trap card, and you know, sadly, it couldn't happen with you know, his health and all that stuff. And but with that, I hope you just understand the impact that he has for us, and not just like, you know, as a person, but just someone that really, I truly shepherded us towards Christ. And I hope you even feel that, like, even in our pod and how we do ministry. I really believe that's a direct influence from Keller. So, yeah, with that, I know it's a little bit different of episode, but I hope you were blessed somehow. And if you haven't, somehow, if you're listening to us and there's a 0.1% chance you have not listened or read Keller, please do so. Because everything that we talk about is somehow diluted from either a sermon or a talk or a paper that he wrote. So please do so at your fastest availability. Just go to gospelandlife.com and all of the sermons are there for free. So with that, Dr. Keller, thank you for everything you've done. Thanks for listening. I know it's been a little bit, but yeah, we have a couple episodes coming up in the summer. Hope to see you then. And thanks for listening.